This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Hi, I'm here today with Dr. Katrina Jackman, who's an associate professor at Southampton. Welcome to the Jodcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you here today to give a talk. So you're talking today a little bit about magnetospheres, about in planets in the solar system. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. So today I'm going to focus on the gas giant planets, and that's Jupiter and Saturn. And it's a really exciting time to be studying those planets because we have a spacecraft at Jupiter called Juno, and we have a spacecraft at Saturn called Cassini. And I've worked on Cassini since the beginning of my PhD, which was back in 2003. So Cassini has had a fantastic time at Saturn, and I've been working primarily with the magnetometer instrument, which measures Saturn's magnetic field. And Cassini is about to finish, so it's executing its final orbits at the moment. Some real daredevil orbits inside of the rings, between the top of the atmosphere and the rings, so it's getting some fantastic data as we speak. And it will finish on the 15th of September of this year. So it's a really great time to be studying Saturn. And then also with Jupiter, NASA's Juno mission arrived in July of 2016. And that is currently, again, doing some fairly daredevil orbits at Jupiter, so really, really close to the planet, and also through the radiation belts, which is a very intense region of Jupiter's magnetosphere with very intense radiation. And so Juno is there at the moment and will be there for some time. And so there are results coming back from that, and actually just last week there was a paper published in Science and a load of papers published in a journal called Geophysical Research Letters with new data from Juno. And it's something that the public can get involved with as well. There are images being released all the time from the Juno cam, which is an instrument that the public can sort of help to control.
Oh, wow.
So some real opportunities both with Cassini and with Juno for the general public, or for astronomy enthusiasts to get involved and learn more about these amazing environments.
Yeah, that is very cool. And so you focused more specifically on the magnetospheres, as you're saying. So what does that term actually mean?
So a magnetosphere is really like a magnetic bubble that exists around a magnetized planet. So Earth has a magnetosphere, and the magnetosphere protects us and keeps us alive. It protects us from space weather. And so the Earth has a giant magnet inside it, and like the kind of magnets that you would have seen in school, where if you throw some iron filings at the magnet, you'll see the iron filings trace out the shape of dipole field lines. You can imagine with these planets in the solar system that have big magnetic fields inside them, those magnetic field lines stretching out huge distances into space. And the magnetic field of planets like the Earth and like Jupiter and Saturn, they're very strong fields, and they hold off the solar wind. And the solar wind is a stream of charged particles that flows away from the sun, and it's magnetized, and it contains plasma, which is charged particles. And so the magnetosphere is the magnetic bubble that is resisting this solar wind flow. And so we live within the Earth's magnetosphere, but it's also really interesting to study the magnetospheres of other planets because they have properties which are different to our own, and it's always interesting to compare and contrast.
And what can those magnetospheres of other planets, can they tell you anything about what makes up the planet itself? Because I suppose something must create them as well.
So we don't actually have a perfect understanding yet of the interiors of Jupiter and Saturn. In fact, one of the main science goals of Juno is to understand what's inside Jupiter, because it's not currently known whether Jupiter has a solid core or to what depth that core might extend. And studying the magnetic field really helps you to learn about the dynamo that's causing the field itself. And similarly for Saturn, one of the biggest mysteries that we have for Saturn is that we actually don't know how long a day is on Saturn. So we don't know how quickly the planet rotates.
We thought we knew it before.
Well, we thought it was all fine. So when the Voyager spacecraft went past Saturn in the early 80s, it measured radio emission from Saturn, which was pulsing at a particular period. And radio emissions are usually a really good marker of the rotation period of whatever body they're emanating from. And so there was a measurement made of the radio emission from Saturn with a certain value, and it was a very clear periodic pulse. And then 20, 30 years later, when Cassini came back, it measured the radio emission again, and it measured a periodic pulse, but it wasn't at the same period as before.
Oh, really?
So that was really puzzling.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, that radio emission is intimately tied to the magnetic fields of the planet, because those two things are linked in terms of the generation mechanism. And so one of the things that Cassini is going to do during this phase right now, at the end of the mission, is fly really, really close to Saturn and resolve the internal magnetic field to a very high degree. So get a really good understanding of what's going on inside Saturn, what's going on with the dynamo, and fundamentally tell us how long a day is.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning about the magnetosphere, as an answer to your question, does help us to learn about the interior of the planets, because that's where those magnetic fields are generated. We still have a lot of open questions in the solar system, mm-hmm. and it's really exciting to be involved in missions that are answering those fundamental questions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I had no idea that we didn't know how long the day was on Saturn. That's incredible. And it's bizarre, because it seems like at first something that would be fairly straightforward to figure out.
One would think so. Now, yeah. Of course, with any body that has visible features on the surface, mm-hmm. you can also just track visually. You can observe a body rotating around.
Mm-hmm.
But with Saturn and Jupiter, they're gas giant planets, and so they don't have a solid surface that we can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can track their rotation, and you can look at the clouds, and that in itself is a very interesting science.
Mm-hmm.
And just in the last week, Juno has sent back some amazing pictures of mm-hmm. Jupiter's really swirling clouds, and there's a lot going on there. But studying the atmosphere is not the same as studying the deep interior,
mm-hmm.
and so that's where magnetometers or instruments that measure magnetic fields can help us to answer some of those big questions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's fascinating. And so what for you drives you to study magnetospheres and magnetic fields? Like,
well, I first got into it during my undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
So I did an applied physics degree in Ireland, and part of my degree was a 9-month work placement in third year.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that at the Mullard Space Science Laboratory, which is part of University College London. And at the time, Cassini was approaching Saturn. And so part of my job was working on the electron spectrometer of Cassini and just checking how it was functioning during the cruise. And I just really fell in love with space
mm-hmm.
then. As I say, my degree was applied physics, so it was a range of all kinds of physics, from semiconductors to medical physics to, well, every kind, really. And there wasn't really a great deal of astronomy or space science in my degree. But I always thought it was something that I might like to do. And I think the work placement gave me the opportunity to see whether the reality, the day-to-day reality of working mm-hmm. as a space scientist was all that I had dreamed it would be. And it, you know, not to sound too corny, but it really was. I loved working on Cassini, and I was really excited when I finished that work placement to go back, do the final year of my degree, and then I managed to get a PhD place at the University of Leicester. And that was working with Professor Stan Cowley on the magnetometer data from Cassini, and it was really, really great to be starting my PhD just before Cassini arrived at Saturn. It was a fantastic time and a fantastic day set, and I haven't looked back. It's been great.
No, it sounds like you were there at the right time.
Yeah. I got lucky, for sure.
And what would you say is the main thing that we've learned from Cassini in your particular area?
So I'd say one of the main discoveries that's been made by the magnetometer team, led by Professor Michelle Doherty at Imperial College London, has been the discovery at the moon Enceladus.
Mm-hmm.
So Enceladus is one of many, many moons of Saturn. There are more than 60, and Cassini has found quite a few in its time. And so Enceladus is one of these icy moons, and Cassini passed by Enceladus initially back in late 2004. And the magnetometer sensed quite a peculiar magnetic signal as the spacecraft passed by Enceladus. And it hadn't necessarily expected to measure anything, because as far as we knew, Enceladus didn't have any internal magnetic field or didn't have any atmosphere. And so it was strange when Cassini passed by for Cassini to measure anything other than just the ambient magnetic field of Saturn. But instead, there was evidence as Cassini flew by that the magnetic field of Saturn was being somehow draped around Enceladus, or being slowed down, the plasma was being slowed down in that region. And so more and more study was done, and actually Professor Michelle Doherty persuaded the Cassini mission planners to take Cassini a bit closer to Enceladus, have a better flyby with a closer look. And what ultimately transpired is that Enceladus doesn't have an internal magnetic field of its own, but it has plumes of material coming out of the cracks near the southern pole, these tiger stripes. They're very beautiful if you can ever see an image of Enceladus. And that's probably one of the headline discoveries of Cassini, initially led by the magnetometer team, but in collaboration with the imaging team and the plasma teams. And, you know, Cassini is a great example of a mission where there are many, many instruments and there are people from all nationalities, from all over the world, working together to get the best out of the spacecraft and to get the best out of the opportunity of having flown all the way to Saturn to be able to take these measurements. So I'd say Enceladus was an unexpected surprise and has really been one of the highlights of the Cassini mission. And since that initial discovery, we've learned a lot more about Enceladus, and there have been many, many more flybys. So the spacecraft has flown by and has been able to almost sniff these plumes. And most recently, actually, there was a publication of a result of molecular hydrogen in one of these plumes, which is indicative of the conditions that can support life.
Oh.
Doesn't mean that they've discovered life, so I should be very clear on that, but conditions for habitability seem to exist on Enceladus, most likely in a subsurface ocean. And so those discoveries are made through using a combination of instruments, using imagers, using ion neutral mass spectrometers, using magnetometers, using plasma sensors, and through many, many years of very, very careful data analysis and collaboration with people across the world. So Enceladus has been a really, really fascinating body to study.
Yeah, it sounds it. And what's it been like to be part of Cassini for such a long time? Because obviously it's, you've been involved with it since the beginning of your career, really.
Yeah, it's just been a real privilege. I was very lucky as a student to have access to this data set. And as I've progressed through my career, I see the years and years of effort that people put into planning space missions, and often it's people who are late on in their careers who are planning space missions, which will really benefit the next generation. So I feel just immensely privileged to have had access to Cassini data from the beginning of my PhD and through my early postdoc years and now to where I am at this stage. So I'll certainly be sad when it finishes in September. But of course, the end of the mission itself certainly doesn't mean the end of the data analysis, and we will have those data sets for years to come. And I certainly hope that myself and my students will have the time to delve into those data sets in more detail.
Yeah, I think often people think that once you get to the end of the mission, that's it, right? But there's still so much science to be done.
Absolutely, and particularly for some of my colleagues on the magnetometer team who are working really hard to resolve the problem of this internal magnetic field and the length of the day. Those are not overnight results. The data will come through from the spacecraft, but they will be very, very carefully analysed. And so, yeah, it won't be the end for Cassini scientists, but it will certainly be a day to mark in September.
Oh, that makes sense. And so now thinking more towards the future, and, you know, even though Cassini will still have a place, what are you looking forward to the most over the next few years?
So right now I'm doing a little bit of work on Jupiter. So I'm doing some work with Jupiter's X-ray emissions. So Jupiter has very, very bright emissions from its polar regions. So it has auroral emissions in multiple wavelengths, and in ultraviolet and in X-ray. And if you Google Jupiter's aurora, you're most likely to see a picture of the ultraviolet aurora, but there is also significant X-ray emission from the poles. And so recently I've been working with data from the Chandra Observatory and also from XMM Newton, and they are Earth-orbiting X-ray observatories which have been looking at Jupiter to measure the X-ray emission both from the poles and from the disk of the planet. And so what we're hoping to do over the coming months and years is to combine that X-ray data with data from the Juno spacecraft so that we have a remote picture of what's going on with Jupiter's X-rays, and that we also have in situ measurements from Juno to tell us what the fields and particles are doing and mm-hmm. how the conditions in the magnetosphere are driving those X-rays.
Mm-hmm.
So Jupiter is certainly a focus for now.
Mm-hmm.
No, that makes sense. And I hadn't even thought about aurorae producing X-rays at all.
So Jupiter is really a planet of superlatives. It's mm-hmm. the biggest planet in the solar system. It's got a very rapid rotation, less than 10 hours. It's got a very, very strong magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And that scenario combines to give these very, very strong X-rays, mm-hmm. and so they're something, it's a field that's kind of emerging,
mm-hmm.
I would say, but it's a really good opportunity when you have a spacecraft like Juno in situ taking mm-hmm. measurements to then have any kind of remote observing that you can manage. So looking with Hubble at the mm-hmm. UV aurora, looking with Chandra and XMM or even New Star at the X-rays, and then even ground-based observers are looking mm-hmm. at Jupiter in the infrared. So all eyes are on Jupiter at the moment, as well as Saturn. It's mm-hmm. a busy time for gas giant fans.
Well, that sounds like an exciting time to be working, really.
It is. It's great.
Yeah. So I guess we'll leave it there because you've got to get ready for your talk. But thank you very much for coming on the Jodcast.
Thank you very much.
And hopefully we'll have you back again in the future.
Sounds good.